Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And action! Hello and welcome to episode 380 of the Filmmakers Podcast. This is a podcast where we talk
filmmaking
from indie film to studio films to TV to documentaries and
spy thrillers in between.
How to get them made, how to make them, and how to try not to
royally let the cat out of the bag.
In our very, very humble opinion, welcome to the Filmmakers Podcast and welcome to this very special episode, because we have on the amazing producer and director, Matthew Vaughan.
Ooh, what a guest.
It's an absolute belter. Yeah. Absolute belter. What a guest. And he sits down with both myself and Dom to chat about his latest film, Argyle. But we also dive deep into his past as a filmmaker and how he gets his movies made. What will our audience learn from this chat with Matthew, Dom?
They will learn about reinventing the action franchise, making Argyle and spy adventures, creating a brand and finding the heart in stories. And one of, one of my favourite ones was his indie beginnings and how he kind of formed his own Brat Pack.
We also talk about how he fell into directing via Guy Ritchie and his wife Claudia, how Daniel Craig gave him advice on the set of Layer Cake on his directing debut, how he raised money for Lockstock, and why he does a chemistry test with his leading actors, and also gives you some amazing advice during this chat as well.
Almost too amazing.
Almost too amazing. For those of you who don't know who Matthew Vaughan is, then that's a bit like
stop making films.
just stop. But one of our leading British filmmakers is. Some of his credits include as a producer. His first film was The Innocent Sleep, and then he produced Lock, Stock and Two Smoky Barrels, Snatch, Mean Machine, Swept Away, and then he directed Layer Cake, Stardust, Kick-Ass, X-Men First Class, Kingsman 1, 2 and hopefully 3. He also produced Eddie the Eagle Edwards and Rocket Man for Dexter Fletcher, and now he's just released Argyle.
And don't forget Tetris.
And produced Tetris as well, which was edited by our good friend Cole Gowdy, who set this up for us. So in Argyle, the movie stars Henry Cavill, Sophie Boutella, Dua Lipa, Ariana DeBose, John Cena, Samuel L. Jackson, Bryan Cranston, Catherine O'Hara, Rob Delaney, and it stars
the incredible Bryce Dallas Howard, Sam Rockwell, and more importantly than anyone else, Matthew Vaughan's cat.
Yep, which does have a name.
And his cat is named Chip, who was brought in after an expensive cat actor, or cat actor, proved to be a disaster on the first day of filming. Vaughan decided to bring his own cat to set. Although cats don't live in sets, they live in houses because they're not badgers.
Very good. We don't talk about the cat because we had so many other things to talk about, and you can find any of that stuff online. We wanted to get to the heart of filmmaking and what made him want to make films and how he managed to make his first films in the first place. It's fascinating. It's such an interesting chat. You're going to love it. We just wanted to say, like, since Christmas, Dom, we have had some incredible guests. And we've sort of rounding it all off. We've got another amazing guest next week as well. But let's just run through who we've had since Christmas. We have had One Life and Slow Horses director James Hawes. We have had Rustin and Ma Rainey's Black Bottom screenwriter and director George C. Wolfe. We have had The HODs behind Oppenheimer, including editor Jennifer Lame, costume designer Ellen Morojnik, makeup designer Louisa Abel, and hair designer Jamie Lee McIntosh, all of whom have been nominated for BAFTAs. I think three out of the four have been nominated for Oscars as well. And the director of The Orphanage and The Impossible and the latest Society of the Snow, out now on Netflix, J.A. Bayona, as well as George Clooney's producing partner, Grant Heslov, to talk about The Boys in the Boat and Argo. And obviously last week's fantastic chat Dom had with director Mahalia Bello, talking about The End We Start
From. What a classic
from.
That was.
What? This is literally in the last month.
Yeah, it's frankly outrageous. And we've got just as outrageous ones coming up.
Exactly.
Just as outrageous.
Just as outrageous. We won't tease you on what those are because we've just teased you with previous guests. Yeah, so after you've listened to the 7th of the month amazing guest, Matthew Vaughan, and just spare a thought for our editor of this
Tobias
Filmmakers
me.
Podcast, myself.
Ah, oh yeah.
And Tobias helped this month as well. He's jumped on 2 episodes, Tobias Vies. Thank you. It's been a lot.
Good Austrian lad.
Yes, indeed. But we've delivered you filmmaking tips and knowledge. So if you do like this, do us a favour. Jump on our socials. Jump on IMDb. Do you know what? Jump on IMDb because people are mean on IMDb.
Jump on a trampoline.
Jump on the bandwagon and just give it a nice review. Give it a star rating. Some people on IMDb just decide to go on IMDb and give everything 1 stars they've ever just heard of, not even heard of. I don't get that. I've never got that, why someone would do that on people's indie film. Just give it 1 star. What is wrong with you? If that's you, there's something seriously wrong with you. Don't do that. Support each other's indie films. I can't imagine there's anyone who listens to this podcast. We're all supporting each other, so it's so important that you do the same. Speaking of which, support Matthew. Not that he needs it as much, but go see Argyle.
He needs your support.
He's out in cinemas now. He needs your support. Yeah.
But it's an amazing episode, so let's get to it.
Let's do it, Dom. This is myself, Giles Alderson, and Dom Lenoir, talking to the amazing filmmaker, producer, director, superstar, Matthew Vaughan. Have fun.
I certainly hope you dance as well as you dress.
There's only one way to find out.
You and I, we're not so different. Agent Argyle.
Little help? Hold on.
The book is phenomenal, sweetie, but...
What happens next?
It's called a cliffhanger, Mother.
Ellie, it's called a cop-out.
Whoa! Hey! There's a cat in there!
Oh my God, you're Ellie friggin' Conway.
Author of the Argyle series, Ellie Conway!
I am such a fan!
Oh yeah? What is it you do?
Espionage.
Would you sign my book?
Here we go.
I love this book! Come on!
Oh, so now you're experimenting with drugs.
I want all assets on them now.
I need her to write the next chapter.
God, I hate that cat.
It's time for you to meet the real Agent Argyle.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Hey, Matthew. I'm Giles.
Hey, Matthew.
How are you doing?
Pleasure to meet you.
Dom, are you going out skiing?
Why are you we both just had that conversation outside.
It just came to winter and I needed some new boots and these were just warm and fluffy.
Your feet must be dying. It's hot as hell today compared to the last week. But anyway, sorry.
The weather's changed, but
No, it has changed.
They were good in the cold.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Cool.
I just love to talk about I mean, you've really redefined the sort of superhero genre. I mean, with Kick-Ass, right. I remember when that first came out, the drama, the real like sacrifice and hope, but also this kind of crazy, brilliant comedy. Mm. And it was a really distinct tone. And you've done that with Kick-Ass, you've done it with Kingsman, and now with Argyle. Mm-hmm. So I'd just love to speak about, with Argyle specifically, how you approach building a franchise, because it's a fantastic movie.
It's really simple. I'd imagine I'm a member of the audience, and I just try to make movies that I would be sitting with a bunch of friends watching the screen and enjoying it. And I know what I wouldn't enjoy is seeing the same old thing done in the same way again and again and again. So, and it'd be, you know, it's boring to make it, I imagine, just as much as it's boring to watch. So that's my only rule, is be entertaining.
So what was that kind of process when you first came across the IP and the books and...
With Argyle?
Yeah.
It was funny because the first script was, you know, it was really well written, but it was quite generic. And it was sort of... but it had most of the twists were in there. So that got me really excited, because the twists was what brought me into it. Mm. But it unlocked this... this idea of me saying, okay, let's do fictional spies over the top, sort of the tropes that I'm just as guilty of creating with Kingsman, but you know, Bond or you know, Man from U.N.C.L.E., all of these, you know, the super spies that we are all comfortably enjoyable but have been done to death, and then counteract it with a new type of spy, the scruffy, this is what spies are like in the real world, and you know, you have Henry Cavill basically, and then Sam Rockwell, and that excited me, because in the original script it was like there's the spy, fantasy spy would be like a Henry Cavill, but they're imagining like a Brad Pitt, and I'm like, yeah, but there's we're not really saying anything, we're saying nothing at that point, and there was none of the intercutting or the imagining, you know, it was just a device of a book being very close to the truth. So I sort of changed that and made the book ridiculous and over the top, but in the original script the book was really realistic. It was much more a John le Carré a Frederick Forsyth or a Ludlum style book, not a Vaughan Nutty Mayhem of Madness one. So and then once we did that, then so when you say about franchise building, and I was thinking, well, again, you meet Ellie Conway and she had a cat, but she leaves the cat behind. Mm. And I thought, well, hold on, let's give these two characters a real bone of contention. She should take the cat with her, and Sam should be allergic to cats, and then you're on this weird adventure with a cat. And then I also thought, as an iconic look, backpack, cat, spy adventure, Henry Cavill, flat top, Nero collar, iconic, a new spy, old spy, and then Sam Rockwell. So it was, so you try to give it new,
unique touches.
Yeah, unique, instantly memorable moment. So with Kingsman, I could draw on there now a pair of glasses and an umbrella. You think Kingsman. Mm. So with this one, I'm hoping either you see the flat, we see that its symbol, or you see a cat in the
pointing
backpack.
To a very well merchandised hat.
Yes,
that he's wearing.
Yeah. I think people, you know, I think a lot of people will now know what Argyle is. Where before you say Argyle, they don't even know it's a pattern now. Hopefully we've sort of claimed for ourselves the Argyle pattern.
Yes. Is that something you think about when with the title and thinking, okay, what's our brand? What's the whole thing around it with the pattern that you just mentioned? I mean, maybe
the name, we changed the spelling. We changed the spelling. Ah. And if you, with the spoiler alert, look at the spelling and then look at it backwards.
We're all trying to work it out now.
Ellie.
Yeah, Ellie.
Yeah.
The name of the character. That's great. I love it because both me and Dom are filmmakers ourselves.
Good.
And it's really nice when these little things, these little tiny little tidbits that our filmmakers love on this podcast and they're talking to. And so it's so nice that you gave us time to chat. And it was Cole Gowdy, actually, who was the one who was saying, hey, come and talk with Giles and Dom.
Yeah. Cole. Brilliant editor.
He is a brilliant editor.
Brilliant human being.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely great. And obviously worked with you. We thought Tetris was the first one he might have worked with you on, but it might have something before that he probably worked on as
dipped toes in the water.
He might have dipped his toes, but he went feet first into Tetris.
Literally, yeah, the yeah. building blocks yes, of that. Yeah. I love Tetris, by the way. Yeah, I think it's fantastic. Yeah, you
know, Cole was a master on that.
Yes, yeah. and he has been on this as well. Yes. You know, on Argyle. Yeah. So yes, but in terms of actual thinking about titles, thinking about, as Dom said, that franchise sort of idea, and whether it is a sequel later or not, is, like you said, thinking about the title and changing it, is that something that always comes into the idea of when you're thinking about story?
Yeah, I was sort of inspired by Walt Disney and the way that, and I saw he did a graph, and because remember, guys, I started off as a film producer.
Yes. Okay?
So, yeah. you know, so I the business of film was the only business I ever imagined I would be in. I had no intention of ever being a director.
Really?
No interest, okay. no aspirations,
wow.
no belief. Right. And I
which is ironic because you become a very distinct, like, original director.
Well, yeah, but you tell me. But what I can say is it was so in Layer Cake, Guy Ritchie was meant to direct Layer Cake, right?
Oh,
so we developed it for him, and then he sat me down and said, "Look, Matthew, I've changed my mind. I don't want to do this." And then I was like, "Oh my god, I got to get another director. Where do I find that? How am I?" You know, we were getting all ready to make it, and then my wife said to me, "You should direct it." And I was like, are you out of your mind? Why would I?
That looks party hard.
Yeah, well, no, I was just like, this is how I've never even picked a camera up. This is crazy. But then, ironically, I then had to go see the writer of the book and the screenplay, JJ Connolly. And I said, JJ, look, I've got bad news. Guy's pulling out. I need to find a director. And he went, well, you should do it. And I was, and I went, why are you saying that? And I thought, bloody Claudia's going to rung him up or something. I said, he's speaking to my wife. And he went, no, why? Yeah. What? Yeah. And I said, well, she just said the same thing. And then I went off and had a really, really long, hard think about it. But then I realized I'd basically prepped the movie already. So I was going to be trying to find a director to take over all the prep we'd done.
Yeah.
I was terrified of being a director because if it failed, then I'd be a failed director producer. And every time I speak to a director as a producer, they go, "What are you talking about? You made that crap film. Shut up!" You know, I would have lost the high ground as a producer. So that was a big risk doing Layer Cake.
What do you think it was that was the turning point for you to say, "Yeah, I am going to do it"?
My wife just kept pushing me, And
she
by the
knew.
Way,
she knew.
Yeah, she really knew. Yeah. She knew. She just said, "You should be doing this. You're an idiot not doing it." And it got to a point where she persuaded me the wrong decision. I suddenly realized saying no would be a big mistake because also I couldn't find another director for it. Yeah, so it wasn't. It was like, oh my god, we need to make this movie no one else was interested.
So you've already got the sort of creative side. You're already thinking about that as a producer. Going into that directing.
Well, no, I was just trying to control the creative.
What were some of the biggest hurdles? I mean, you know, working with actors.
For me?
Yeah. I mean, going into Layer Cake, what were some of those big things?
The scariest thing was actors and camera.
Yeah.
Right. The script I was sort of used to. Editing, I was comfortable in editing. Yeah. I was very comfortable in prep. Acting and camera work, I was like, oh no, what do I do? And also I was scared because, you know, an established, we couldn't afford a big DP.
Yeah.
And most big DPs wouldn't have been interested in working with me.
Yeah.
So thank God I had Ben Davis because then I met with Ben and he was just very cool with me and really relaxed and sort of was keen and hungry, and I knew he's a great operator. I love, you know, camera movement at the right time and the right place, let's say.
Sure.
So Ben, you know, Ben became my teacher on that film.
Okay.
And was a true partner in every way. And then on the first day of rehearsals, I'll never forget it. It was Michael Gambon, rest in peace, and Daniel Craig. And we were doing
first day.
Yeah, first day of rehearsals.
No short, man.
No pressure at all.
Yeah, and I'm sitting there and we're back rehearsing. And then after about an hour and a half of it, Daniel said, "I'm going for a cigarette break." And he said, "Come with me." You know, just, and I went, okay. So we went outside and he's puffing away. He goes, "Matthew, I'm just going to give you one word of advice. You shouldn't give Michael Gambon line readings." And I was like,
yeah.
I went, "What's a line reading?" I didn't know what it was.
Right. Yeah.
And he goes, you keep giving line readings. You act the line
yeah.
for him to repeat. And yeah, was that not how you do it? And he was like, no, we're actors. You give us direction. We will interpret it. Then you listen to it. And then you tweak us.
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea. All right. Okay. Well, I won't do that one again. So that was a big, big learning curve. But Daniel was great as well. Yeah. Michael Gambon was amazing. The fact Michael didn't say anything. Michael was just, you know, Michael was a sweetheart. Mm. And so was Daniel. They were, the cast were very,
accommodating.
They were very, it was really, I mean, they didn't question me. And if I wasn't sure about something, we'd just talk about it. And so it became fun. But I do tend to cast brilliant actors, because then all I need to do is tweak them a bit. Because, you know, John Huston said directing is 90% casting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's right, because I'll say to you as directors or anyone listening, you can have the best screenplay, the best camera work or cinematographer, the best editor, the best composer, the best everything. If you have bad acting, there is nothing you can do to save that movie. You are dead in the water. So all I can say is cast it properly.
Yeah.
And I always just say, people say, well, how do you direct? I just say, look, my skill set is when an actor comes in, I know within 5 seconds they're right for the role.
Yeah.
And people say, well, how do you know that? I went, because I'm watching them and I'm listening to them as a viewer going, keep saying the lines. Yeah. So that's how they get the part. And people say, wait, how do you know where to put the camera? And I was like, you just put it in the place that tells the story. It's really obvious. If we're talking now, we'd put a camera there and there. Yeah. If you were, you know, looking down, I'd put the camera down there. It's just, I always say the camera is the voyeur into the scene. Just put it, you know, tell the story with it. But cast. It's so important.
So how did you sort of develop your language of working with actors going forward from that film up into sort of where you are now in terms of, does it come from the script a lot of the time? Did you know, in terms of giving direction, because you're obviously not doing line readings anymore.
Well, no, I want to do is, I mean, it's like being a conductor of an orchestra. If you've got great players, you know, you're just, I always say this, they're just, you know, they're just waving a stick. and
tell that to Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. No, but they really are. At the end of the day, it's bullshit. You know, they are. And I've had a go. You're just doing 3-4 and you're just helping a bit. Mm-hmm. But you can leave the room and then go, great orchestra, yeah, whatever. Let's play the piece of music. So that's our job. We're conducting. Well, I get to conduct some of the best players in the world, and I just enjoy it and let them, you know, and I just shade it up or down. I mean, sometimes it's literally, can you slow it down a bit louder, a bit softer?
Yeah.
With Rafe, it was amazing directing him, because he's a brilliant director. Mm. But Rafe and I had a really, really, really good. Well, I thought I had a really good experience with him, and I loved working with him.
Funny as well.
We had little signs for up, down, this, dial it up. He was amazing. I've been blessed. The cast I've worked with they've made me look much better at my job than I really am.
And it is so interesting you say that as well. We've just finished a film with Colm Meaney as well, who's obviously in Layer Cake as well. He was so
fantastic.
Good.
Fantastic actor.
So good, right? Yeah, he did 3 Day Millionaire with us. And I think, well, I suppose maybe going back to that situation, was that cast already on board? Did he help?
Which one?
Layer Cake, in terms of your first one. So no one attached. So then you had to go in with, I'm directing this one, who wants on board?
Yeah, and then I had to go and find some desperate actors. So Gambon, I knew him from as a producer, my first movie he was in.
Yes, this Innocent Sleep. Yes.
And that was a train wreck of a movie, right? I mean, the making of that film, I've never seen anything like it. I'm talking about, you know, every crew member, you know, everyone shagging each other, more drugs, more drink, people. It was
healthy set.
Pandemonium. And I thought that was normal, right? I was like, oh, this is... So I remember when I said to the guy we're making, I said, right, we've got to be careful. We have to be disciplined. These crews are nuts and actors will disappear. And we have to... And it was... I had the wrong end of the stick of how film, you know, the Innocent Sleep was nuts. I mean, I was 23 as well, so we were all, you know, just to say we knew how to have fun.
So then when you went on to Lockstock and you realized that, this is how it should be done.
Well, I could say with Innocent Sleep, but Gambon was on it and he kept taking me to one side and helping me out because, oh my God, what do I do here? And he'd say, so he really looked after me.
Great.
And we got on extremely well. So, he was one of the first people I asked to be in it, because I knew if Michael said yes, more people would go, if he's good enough for Michael, then he's good enough for me. And Michael was sweet. He went, of course I'll do it, right?
That's nice.
So I will always be grateful. for him to jump, Sir Michael.
Yes, to Sir Michael.
Lockstock.
Yeah.
It was more controlled nuts. So again, you know, Guy and I was off. You know, we went off, made this movie, and then on Lockstock, the whole thing was shot on a Steadicam, and we just belted it out in Super 16 and 36 days. We shot it in, and it was. But that was Lockstock was a camaraderie of. The Innocence Heap was just chaos and no one really helping each other out. This was a band of brothers that were it was Guy, me, the four boys, and Vinnie Jones going to war, and we had the time of our lives.
So how did you kind of move from those kind of brilliant, kind of on the fringe of independent films to full-blown kind of action, the Matthew Vaughn vision? Because there's obviously you're starting to build those building blocks early on, but then you've defined yourself very sort of clearly in these other bigger movies.
Well, the weird thing what people don't realize is Kingsman, Argyle, they're independents, right? So, and I think...
Nice budget independence.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're still independent.
Yeah, so no, they are. Yeah, sure,
you know,
yeah.
Everyone says independent. That doesn't mean cheap.
No,
I mean,
of
it does. In theory, most are.
Yeah.
Because studios aren't that interested. But I was like, why does independence have to mean art?
I know what you
house?
Mean. Yeah, yeah.
You know, and if you look at Lockstock and even Snatch and Layer Cake, they were commercially minded movies.
Yes, that's
you know?
True.
Mean Machine as well. Yeah,
Mean Machine, commercially minded. So with... And I just thought, just because I wanted, and I think when you say, what did you say? I don't want to say with the brand or the style or whatever films.
I mean, like Kick-Ass, it was its own thing when it arrived. I hadn't really seen that before.
Mm. But that's because there was no studio involvement. So this is the issue, right? If you're a director, and there are many directors out there that are labeled bad,
yeah,
and I don't know whether that's true or not, but they were definitely put into bad situations.
Sure.
And this is what's wrong with I think it's changing now, but for the last 10, 12 years, franchises have been the driving force of these big blockbusters.
Mm.
You know, not actors, not movie stars, not directors, the franchise.
Yeah.
You know, and most franchises, you say, well, who directed it? You're like, I don't know. And who is playing that role? Or would that person in that role, if they didn't have the cape or the shield or whatever it is, no one gives a shit if they're in a film. And what happens is directors are forced into decisions that they know is wrong, and then they do their best with it, and then the film comes out and they get blamed for the bad decision, and their career's over. And well, they go into director's jail, and then you have just small independent try and get back out.
But I
would say that I'm not dismissive of people's work, because I hadn't done a big studio movie. When I did the big studio movie and encountered some of the worst ideas I've ever heard in a room with 20 people nodding, saying, that's a brilliant idea, because it came from the chairman of the studio who doesn't know what he or she is saying. And then I'm like, well, you actually expect me, that's not a joke? You want to do that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's the thing. Like, so many of these big movies, the narrative structure destroyed because, okay, well, this bit will get a laugh, inverted commas, because this thing laughed some other time.
Yeah.
And then you lose the character structure, you lose the meaning of why we should care about it. There's so much. And, you know, your films like Kick-Ass or The X-Men, the way you treated those, they were all like really meaningful films that had arcs that meant something. And I'm guessing you had to fight quite hard for that.
Well, Kick-Ass, I didn't, because no one, we made that independently. Nobody wanted to make it. Nobody wanted to release it when it was finished. My belief is the crazier you go, the more you have to ground it, ironically. The more the more you have to have something to latch onto. Or otherwise, you just go, I don't care. You have to care. For me, my movies, and I think the movies I respond to, is when you relate to the heroes or the anti-hero, but you relate to the characters and you want to go on their journey with them. You want to learn with them. You want to win with them. And when you don't, and you should be upset if one of them dies, but a lot of these other movies, you just don't care. They're all interchangeable, which just doesn't work. But it all comes down to, storytelling, and the rules of a story are the rules of a story. And we've been saying stories since we're cavemen, and we need them, and it keeps humanity alive.
That's so good to say that, especially with Kick-Ass, what you're talking about, and the story and the characters that were created and we believed in and we cared about from the beginning.
Yeah.
You mentioned there about, we made it independently. How did you make it independently? Because with Well, Kick-Ass, because right. in terms of no studio involvement, you're going, okay, by this point, Marv is set up. Mm-hmm. So how, for independent filmmakers out there who are going, yeah, studio, we're trying in the studio doors, but raising that financial, raising, obviously you had success behind you. One yeah. of your films.
Lockstock's probably a better way of describing
yes.
it. Yeah, because Lockstock yeah. was, so when we made Lockstock, you know, Guy and I were, couldn't have been more unproven. And we literally got the Sunday Times rich list out and just was cold calling people. And what I find with money is once you raise a bit more, it's getting the first person on that hook. Mm. And it's like how you literally you're fishing with a fishing hook with no bait on it. But once you get the bait on it, then more fish come and it starts, you know, helping the movie happen. So on Lockstock, I think we worked out we'd raised something like 35 million.
Wow.
But what actually, with the money that actually hit our account was 900,000. wow. The amount of people say, yeah, we'll back it. And then
yeah.
when it comes down to it, actually,
1/35th, basically. Yeah, 1/36th.
Yeah. 1/36th.
Yeah. So we didn't need 35 million. We thought we needed 3.2 to make yeah. the movie. That okay. was our budget.
And was that just guessing at the time?
No, we had a budget. You can't raise money. Hey, you know, we did a budget.
Sure.
We did a showreel. We did storyboards. Yep. They had the script. Mm-hmm. Guy had made a really good short film.
He had the hard case. There we go.
So I thought we were good, you know, we were young and we were excited.
Yeah.
And then we ended up raising £960,000.
Okay.
And then I looked at Guy and said, look, we've got to figure out a way of making it for 960 grand, you know.
Yeah. Good producing that,
and I said, and so then we went from 35 mil down to Super 16. We went from 50 days down to 36. We came up with a big deferment structure, and we then, you know, what else did we do? We did every, you know, we had no music budget, so we got a record deal. I mean, that's the only reason we got distribution is we did a record deal because of Sting.
Yes,
we got £100,000. Advance wow. to clear the music songs, yep. wow. right? Wow. So we had the songs, and then we showed the movie to everyone. We got mm-hmm. no offers, wow. zero
really?
Offers. So then I was like, oh God, we've made the most expensive home movie of all time. And I had to ring up the guy running the record company at the time, which was owned by Polygram, mm-hmm. and there was Polygram Films back then. And I said, look, I don't know how to tell you this. We can't get a release. And then he was like, oh my God, how am I going to justify that I've given you guys 100 grand for a movie that's not even coming out. Mm-hmm. So he rang up Polygram Films and said, just do me a favor. Can you just buy it for like 20 quid and put it in two cinemas so I don't look like I'm an idiot?
Mm-hmm.
So they went, oh, okay, we'll take English rights.
thankfully, and they only just
took that. Like that. And exploded. That's how we got distribution. Still no belief in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nothing. And when it became a hit, actually, I thank Chris Evans. It became a really big hit because he saw it and then did a special on TFI Friday all about the movie. Yeah. And then, you know, each weekend we got bigger
yeah.
and bigger and bigger and bigger.
And then it's a cult classic. So let's just talk quickly about Argyle because, you know, it's a brilliant film. It's got a lot of heart. Like it really has.
I think most of them.
They all do, of
course.
You know
what? But it makes me laugh. Everyone talks about, oh, the action. I'm like,
no, I like the heart. I like the action too.
I agree. I'm more proud of the heart. Because heart. By action's not, well, it's not easy, but it's not difficult.
Yeah.
Heart and emotion and connecting to a character, that's a lot harder.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart Food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
Do you have weak, damaged hair? New Garnier Fructis hair filler systems fill hair with strength 7 layers deep. In just one use, you can reverse up to 1 year of damage to hair smoothness. The sulfate-free hair filler plus vitamin CG system gives you up to 79% stronger hair and up to 4 times less breakage. New Garnier Fructis hair filler is available now on Amazon and at Walmart, Target, Ulta, Drug, and select grocery stores.
And I really like what you did with Brees and Sam, because they're really lovable characters.
Yeah.
And there's a huge amount of warmth with them, and it's, you know, it's just such a great, they're such a great sort of unconventional pair as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, how did you go about the actual making of this once you'd had the idea sent to you, to getting studios, financing and casting, you know, those two and the rest of the cast?
Well, I think we sorry, I see, I hear a siren. I'm used to sound. Hey,
Everyone quiet,
for sound.
I would say I can't remember if we said this, but the movies I watched with my daughters during lockdown was Romancing the Stone, North by Northwest, and Charade. I never know how to say it on these interviews. Yeah,
depends if you're North or South.
Yeah, well, or American or English.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
I wanted to reinvent them. And I just felt Bryce and Sam would be a couple that you don't normally get to see together. And we did a chemistry test. So my other tip, and the studios hate it, and the agents hate it even more, and the actors hate it.
Yeah.
But I always say it's not a screen test, it's a chemistry test. It doesn't even need to be filmed. I just need to be in a room and I need to hear the main roles, actors, with each other, bouncing off each other. I need to see it, because the worst thing can happen if you don't, you know, you never know. You could put, I don't know, Steve McQueen with Paul Newman, and it might have been great. It could have been a disaster. Mm. You know, just because you're a great actor and a movie star doesn't mean you're gonna bounce off perfectly with another. And agents hate it.
Yeah.
You know, the studios are too scared to ask. And then I normally speak to the actors and I say, look, this is for all of our sakes. Because can you imagine after the two or three days of filming, we know this isn't working and we have to carry on knowing there is no chemistry between you guys and we're going to be in big trouble, and then the movie's dead in the water. So I do insist on that, you know, they call them chemistry tests. It's not a screen test. It's literally, I've never been in the position that it's not there, because then you have to pick one to get rid of.
Well, that would be the thing, wouldn't it? Actually, this isn't working. Who do we?
Yeah, who do we go? Yeah, at that point, it'll be the biggest star will stay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And obviously you surrounded the movie as well with amazing names, stars, whatever you like. Is that part of your financing structure? Is this
it's part of the fun. For this, it was an, you know, I remember as a kid loving Death on the Nile and the Murder of the Orient Express, because of all these names together, and it just felt bigger than, it made the movie feel even bigger.
Yeah.
And I felt with this one, the characters could handle this many faces and the twists and the turns, so it was justified. It didn't feel like, let's just put lots of names in for the hell of it. I think it helped interweave the narrative.
But none of the names are shallow either. Like they're all well-defined, interesting, sort of funny characters. They don't feel like a cameo ever.
No.
Which can also happen very easily when you just plonk A-list actor in something for no real reason.
Yeah.
So you talking about the agents, was this at a point when the studio had already come on board and you'd got financing, or was this early doors?
We were financing it. So, and then I go out and with this one, Apple got aboard pretty early, and it was quite flattering, because they were like, I said, well, do you want to know who the actors are? And they were like, nope. I was like, what do you mean, no? They were like, he says, there's one thing you've got a track record in is casting, so who the hell are we to even give you a casting advice? We will trust 100%. And I did think, like, when I ran, I said, well, I'm casting Bryce and Sam. I was expecting them to go, what? And they were like, great.
It's a Matthew Vaughn film, you know. That's what it's a brand. It's already amazing, which is
well,
super.
You said it, I'm not saying it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny, I don't
use it if you want.
We'll see.
You built up this amazing career from it, and it's quite incredible. Even the films you've produced, Rocket Man, Eddie the Eagle, so we've had Dexter on the podcast, Tetris, all these wonderful films.
Yeah,
it's like you know, it just keeps going for you. It's a very clever mindset. So you have got a brand, you have got that, whether you want to, you know, chat about it or not. And I think that's really important. Do you think that's something that filmmakers should not necessarily aspire to be, but be thinking about?
If they're interested in it, yes. If they're not, no. I think there are no rules. I think when you're a director or a filmmaker, you've got your own, you are your own person, and you have to do it your own, be just true to yourself. That's all I can say. And as I said, if someone says, what is my brand? It's about trying to, as again, it's entertainment. Somebody said I should have, Marv Films is called Marv because we couldn't think of a name, and that's my initials, and we had to put a name on the layer cake, and Marv just, we just beat Marvel to registering it, so they can't shut me down. Which they tried once on Kickass. Yeah. They got really confused because I was like, "Well, actually, it's printed on a Marvel owned comic."
Yes.
So that shut them up. But somebody said you should have called your company Mischief Movies. And I think that's
that's your secret. Bit of mischief,
and trying to entertain. Entertainment is really.
But entertainment with meaning.
I'm saying entertainment for me is not an ugly word. And actually, I nearly called the movie, I should have called my company Marv Entertainment, because you know there is another name for some for film companies. And I get why they say entertainment. And by the way, entertainment can be an Oscar winning snooze fest. If that's what you're into, that's entertaining. Yeah. But as long as you're delivering to an audience what they're hoping they're going to get, that's our job.
Yeah. I mean, there's always this feeling, I feel like, that people are often pigeonholed into either making a sort of art house heavy drama or entertainment, and it's something that's a bit hollow. And I think you do a very good job of kind of combining the two things.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah.
So just to wrap it up in terms of, you know, Argyle is fantastic and out now, but in terms of, you've given advice already throughout this, but looking back on a young Matthew Vaughan starting on that producer journey, moving into directing, was there something you'd say to him now that would change the trajectory or change something that you did to become the filmmaker you are?
Well, I'm a big believer that making mistakes is okay.
Yep.
As long as you learn from them, you know, so if you, first mistake, fine. You do the same mistake again, you're an idiot, right?
Don't be an idiot.
And I'll tell you what that is for me is, Jesus, a lot of sirens. Sorry, I'm worried about you guys.
But, we're all right. It adds to it.
Not for us.
It's like a Matthew Vaughan film.
Exactly. So when I was attached to direct X-Men 3, remember, I just done one movie, I'd done Layer Cake. Mm. Suddenly I was given a $250 million blockbuster, and I loved X-Men 1 and X-Men 2, and I was meeting Hugh Jackman, and I was playing around with you know, previses, and I was having the time, I was having like what I call big budget movie making school, and I was really enjoying it until I suddenly realized everyone was lying, and I was like, oh, okay, I don't like working with liars. But then there's one thing that I didn't understand back then is I had an independent, you know, mind of, okay, this is the budget, you got to stick to the budget. I didn't understand the concept that that the studio was going to throw money at it to make it work. Yeah. And when they're saying, I got to shoot this in 72 days, beat down, they had 100 days in their head. Yeah. When all these things that they were saying,
they're used to unresponsible people.
And I'm looking at it going, and I thought, okay, well, this is going to be a disaster. I should leave. Now, that was a mistake back then as a young filmmaker with one movie under his belt being given that. That was a really real stupid in the big picture, right? It worked out okay, and it's one of the reasons I went to do the X-Men First Class, because I thought, you know what, I should have made that movie, and now I understand that they will throw money at it, and they will ensure that we have a chance of making a good movie. So what I would say is, if Hollywood comes calling, make sure it's not too big, because I also think that is the mistake that a lot of these directors, they'd make a great smaller film, and it's like saying you're training, you know, they're great 100 meter sprinters, but they go from 100 meters to a 1500K, and they should go to 400 foot and then 800. Just work your way up if you can, but turning down the big opportunities is very, very hard. And make sure you love the idea of making the movie. Don't be blinded by the money. I know it's easy for me to say that nowadays, but
well, it's tough, isn't it? It's really tough to, when you're, okay, well, here's an opportunity. You think, oh, I should do it. But if it's the wrong opportunity, then you can set your career back.
Think of the amount of directors who are talented, who are in director's jail. Not because of their talent, but because they were either put into the wrong movie or they weren't protected.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is producers don't protect the directors anymore. Like, I'm a producer, and we used to have a very important job, and they sort of been sidelined and pushed out. I bet you Megan over here could hardly name any producers.
Not right now, I couldn't.
No. Yes.
There you go.
Yeah. Put on the spot.
Put on the spot.
Not right now. That's the official statement. Mm.
But it is true. You're right. Yeah. Producers,
there's a very important role. A producer and a director should be tied at the head.
Yeah.
And you go to most big budget movies, there's no producer on set. It's all executives, and it's ridiculous.
Yes.
The producer should be protecting the director and listening to the executives and filtering what should happen and what shouldn't.
Yeah. And protecting the creative vision of the film as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which you've done an excellent job with Argar.
Oh, nice.
Which you should be able to go and see.
Yeah.
So, well, that's it. Hopefully.
Make sure you do.
Yeah, great. Make sure you do.
All right.
Matthew, well, thank you for your time.
What thank a pleasure. You. I've got to now carry on and keep on making people make movies.
We will.
We will. Yeah. Thanks, Matthew.
Thank you.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
What a treat.
Mr. Matthew Vaughan.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
If I was going to join a religion, I'd be part of the Vaughan Again Christians.
Please tell me you just made that up on the spot.
I did, yeah, of course I did.
Yeah, it was very good.
Too shit. Had prior thought.
Prior thought. Any prior thought gone into this podcast?
Yeah.
Yes, but not by us.
Very rarely.
Yes. But listen, that's Matthew. Wow, I love that. I love chatting to him. He was really cool, really nice guy. And once he got over your snow boots and mine, quite frankly, he relaxed and realised that we weren't trying to catch him out or do anything like that. We just wanted to chat filmmaking and trying to help you guys.
You do get that, because I guess there's a lot of press that ask the same questions. And also, it's not always like sympathetic to the... I don't think we're inherently sympathetic because of the fact that we're asking about how the film was made. It's always a nice, easy experience, which is always the feedback, actually, like from our guests. Like, they always have a great time, and they say we had a great time. And it's because, you know, that's not the aim. The aim is to tell people how they did it.
We don't want them to have a good time. That's not the aim.
That's completely accidental.
Complete accident. We didn't mean that to happen. Yeah. Apologies to all our guests who had a good time. Yeah. No, I think it's because we care about filmmaking. We care about their journey rather than anything else. Now, Shotlister, you've probably heard us talk about in the past. Basically, Shotlister is the world's leading shot list app. It helps you get what matters most on the day. And if you use this code on any iOS device, you get a free year of Shotlister Pro 5.0. It's usually worth $99, and we're giving you it for free. We're only giving away 99 of these, so get in quick, get in there now. Link to that is in the show notes.
Just looking at this poster of the cat in Argar, and I'm like, the cat's in the rucksack, and then there's like a gun with some sort of pink smoke, and there's the lipstick, and I've got the image of the cat wearing the lipstick in my head. And
do they have lips?
I don't know, he's got a little triangle.
I don't know if they're lips. Are they lips? I mean, I please write in.
Yeah. I'm just wondering, is that what he's thinking, or am I...
I think this is just your brain thinking about the poster for Argyle. Yeah. Wonder no more. Please get that image out of your head. It is one of these amazing films that Matthew just keeps turning up. You know, we've had Mark Strong on the podcast talking about his career and also about Kingsman as well. Yeah. And Kingsman 3, you know, and Mark Strong's character kind of dies at the end of the second one. But it's a Matthew Vaughan joint. So it doesn't mean people can't come back. So Kick-Ass, Kingsman... Argyle is another amazing film in his canon of action franchises, which is something that I'm glad Dom brought up in the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really good chat because I'd expected it to all be about making action films and making these big kind of movies, and actually, like the thing that Matthew was really interested in speaking about was also some of his indie beginnings, which is really good. I mean, it's because he's kind of, you can really see like the genesis of his career, starting off with Guy Ritchie and you know, Layer Cake and some of these other films, and then that kind of progression into Kick-Ass, and then his kind of current blockbuster, and it's nice to see the beginnings of that journey. And you know, also I think what was really nice was the humbleness about people giving him advice, and all these great actors and filmmakers that he's kind of, you know, soaked up this knowledge on and learnt great skills from.
Yeah, totally agree. I loved how he not fell into directing. I think he always knew he'd be a director, but I really like the fact that, you know, when Guy Ritchie said he couldn't do Layer Cake, he was like, well, who's going to direct it?
If I must.
Yeah, and Claudia, his wife, saying, you really should. And then another friend of his said, you really should. Why aren't you directing this? And I love that he just jumped in. And also, what I really liked that he told us, and you, listener, is that he was very honest about not really knowing what he was doing when he was directing, but he had a vision and he had an idea of how stories should be told and where he should put the camera and where he should put his actors. And I think this is the truth of it. It's like, it's your vision. What do you want out of this? How are you going to see the movie?
Yep.
And that's so important.
What do you want?
So important. I love that. What do you want from all this? And yeah, and creating a brand as well. I think it's so interesting how, as filmmakers, it's so hard to do because often we don't get a choice in what the next film is we're doing, or TV series, or even if we get that far anyway, it's like what is offered, you know, sometimes got to take. But if you are in that position, you know, that some of our filmmakers on this podcast are in, it's like, what do you choose?
Yep.
What's the next thing for you as a brand?
Yeah, and I think he's done an exceptional job. I mean, it's an underrated part of his filmmaking is actually the back end. And like, I mean, what they've done for this with the, you know, the cat and the slogans and the merchandise and all of that stuff. It's all very well thought out, and that was actually one of the really exciting bits that we talked in the podcast, which I think we mentioned in the summary, was creating like really unique, memorable traits to characters, which then also translate into marketing perks that are easy to latch onto.
Which I think is really important, you know, when you're making your film. Who is your audience? Are you thinking about marketing and PR already? Because if you're not, how are you going to get your film to that audience? And he's really thinking about that with his brand, his awareness, you know, even on his cap and the style. When you see Argyle poster, or when you see it, it's a very distinct style he has. And I think that's really clever and really important. So yeah, there we go. That was our chat with Matthew Vaughan. I hope you enjoyed it. Like I say, if you did, please go tell your pals and everyone else, and go on IMDb and give us a rating this week. Yes, indeed. But also, go back and listen to some of those episodes we've had on in January, if you haven't yet.
All 380 of them.
There's so much gold just from just the January ones. There's 6 or 7 we've had then.
And then the 372 ones after.
Yeah, exactly. But the advice coming from these filmmakers is incredible.
It's ludicrous, yeah.
It's ludicrous.
Yeah, don't be slacking on the listening.
Basically,
some people are like, oh yeah, well, I listened to that episode. It was really good. And then it's like, well, every episode is completely different advice from like, you know, literally the top people in the industry saying how they did it, and it's a completely different story every time. Like, there really is no better resource for like learning, you know, different ways to get into the industry. Like, it's so valuable. Like, you know, that's why I do it, because you know, because I learn so much from just talking to these amazing people.
Absolutely. So there you have it. Go out there, make your films, make your TV series, make it happen for you. Whatever it is, go do it. And if you're lucky enough to rise up and do well, it is your duty to
jump off the top of the building onto the crash mat where the cat is inhabiting.
But the cat's fine.
No, the cat's all right. The cat's fine.
Great. There you go. We will see you next Tuesday, as always. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Oh, we might have a special for you on Friday as well. But until then, take care. Thank you, Dom.
Thank you, Giles.
Take care, everyone. Bye.